We'll get back into some of the Micah Parsons stuff in about 35 minutes. Evan Washburn, CBS Sports, going to be with us. He also had a great interview with Jaden Daniels that I want to ask him about. This was during training camp, just haven't had time to get him on here. So he's going to join us in about 30 minutes. But we're pivoting now to college football. Week one is this weekend, and we got some doozies. Well, week one is now, effectively. We had some good games last night, have some more good games tonight, and then the big boys coming up on Saturday and Sunday. And joining me now to break these games down, my guy Rob Brown, BetMGM Network. You can also hear him in South Carolina on The Fan Upstate. Follow him on Twitter at The Rob Brown Show. My friend, how are you? How did you do last night on the card?
Benday, I got my ass kicked. I'm real mad. Are the Nebraska Cornhuskers fraudulent? Again, why do I keep falling for Nebraska Denton Day? I can't do it anymore, man.
Yeah, I lost on them, too. I had them covering the 6.5. They did not. They kept me up way later than I needed to be up. Rob, I watched that entire game. I had to watch that entire game because I had to do a show, including that entire game. So they kept me up a little bit longer than I wanted to. Did you bet USF like everybody else did?
I did. And I'll tell you why I did. And I think I said this to you when you were on my show on Wednesday, Denton Day. I said, you're all about to just see how important Ashton Janty was last year. Like, we can talk about Madsen, and we can talk about whoever else you want to talk about on that team. That team 100% was Boise State or was Ashton Janty last year, right? And I took the Bulls for one reason and one reason alone, which was the belief that Ashton Janty was that team last year, and you all got to see how good and how important. I don't think people realize how special of a year and how special of a player we got to watch, regardless of how he does in the NFL, how special of a player we got to watch in Ashton Janty last year, and you all found out last night.
Yeah, he's apparently having a once-in-a-generation running back at a group of five schools, a pretty big deal. Thankfully, I was on USF as well. It felt like everyone was towards the end of it. But the Boise State thing, I'm not a fan of that quarterback there, man. And they were very lousy yesterday.
Yeah, and listen, I do not have Boise State as my group of five team. I couldn't. I saw that they were one of the betting favorites to be the group of five champ that was going to go. I couldn't take it. They got there because of Ashton Janty last year. I don't know what people looked at with Boise State last year and thought, well, without a once-in-a-generation, maybe, and I'm going to keep it a buck, maybe once-in-a-lifetime caliber running back, I have no idea what people were leaning on and thinking the Boise State Broncos were going back this year. I didn't see it.
No, I didn't see it either. So I want to talk about some of the upcoming games this weekend. We'll save the big ones for a little bit, but you're based in South Carolina. They have a big one taking on Virginia Tech, which is like kind of local here. Not really, but it's like 5 hours away from where I'm sitting right now. But it's local enough to where everyone graduates from Virginia Tech and then they take jobs up here. How do you see this one playing out? Is this the year that Lenore Sellers in South Carolina make a massive jump?
I mean, I would like to think so on behalf of all of the South Carolina fans in my listening audience, and therefore the amount of money that I will make if they do make it happen. I'll start with this game, Denton, and then I'll kind of roll it into what it means on the season. I think South Carolina's got to come out and blow the doors off of Virginia Tech. And I know that's not going to be easy because I think Brent Pry is desperate. I was at ACC Media Days, and it seems like most people think that Brent Pry and Dave Dorn are probably the two ACC coaches most likely on the hot seat. So I think that they are desperate, but just on paper, they're not as good as South Carolina. And listen, I'm not making the argument South Carolina is an elite team. They do have who I think is going to be an elite quarterback in Lenore Sellers. But as far as the season goes, South Carolina has the most difficult final seven games in college football. They've got LSU, they've got Ole Miss, they've got Oklahoma, they've got Alabama, they've got Clemson at the end of the year. Maybe the most difficult final seven game stretch in football. So if you're Shane Beamer and the Gamecocks, I think you've got to come into this game looking at it from the standpoint of not only do we need to go 5-0 out of the gate, but we need to blow the doors off of everybody that we are favored against. Because in the final seven games of the year, we might not be favored in any except the Coastal Carolina game, right? Like they could, I'm not saying will, they could be dogs to Oklahoma. They could be dogs to Ole Miss. They will be dogs to Alabama, LSU, and Clemson. So I think they've got to come out and they've got to put fireworks up in these first five games, including Virginia Tech on Sunday, so that when it does get tough down the road, they've got some room for error. I have made the argument. I think this year is a year where it is possible that a 9-3 SEC team could be an at-large playoff team this year. And if that's going to happen, South Carolina is the best candidate because of how difficult the schedule is. But if you're going to have three losses, I think you've got to be prepared to go 4-3 in the backstretch and not lose one in the first five and mandate that you go to the 5-2 down the stretch, because that's going to be a big ask. So I'm going to bet South Carolina to win and cover on Sunday. I will say this. If they do not cover in that game, I will not put another penny on the Gamecocks the rest of the year.
Is Lenore Seller going to make it to New York, do you think?
I mean, I hope so, because I've got a ticket on him to do it. I've got one on him to make it. I've got one on him to win it. Look, here's the deal. I think the good news for Lenore Sellers is that he's going to have plenty of chances to get extra possessions and go do something special with the football, because South Carolina sent more NFL draft picks than they've ever sent before this past year, and they were all defensive guys, Nick Emenwori, et cetera. Like, they sent some dudes. They're going to have to reload, and they're not Georgia, right, where we know Georgia is going to be bringing the 2028 Philadelphia Eagles defense onto the field this year. South Carolina is not that, where they just reload five stars. They are going to have to develop a bunch of guys that have been on this team two or three years, Denton, but have not played much in two or three years, and that's a big ask. So I think that Lenore Sellers is going to be involved in a number of shootouts this year. I'm going to be betting a ton of South Carolina overs this year, but he's going to have the chance, because of that, to put up a ton of numbers. I think he's got the talent. The question is, did the finesse, the touch, the precision passing get better? Because I do think that was the one weakness to his game. And B, did Nick Harbor get rid of the dropsies? And does he have guys lined up at wide receiver that can help him? Because he did not last year. So if the wide receiver room got better, and if he is involved in a bunch of over-crushing shootouts, then yes, I think Lenore Sellers has the talent overall to be a Heisman Trophy finalist this year.
What about Arch Manning?
I'm in a weird spot with Arch, because on one hand, man, I got Paul Feinbaum out here doing everything but providing sexual gratification to Arch Manning, convincing me that, like, he's football Jesus. I'm not in, though. I thought Steve Spurrier had the best take on the whole situation, which was, if Arch Manning is this much this guy, how did he not beat out Quinn Ewers down the stretch last year? And if he was not good enough to beat out Quinn Ewers down the stretch last year, was one off season enough to develop him from guy who could not beat out Quinn Ewers to guy who is the clear front runner for Heisman Trophy? Because that is a massive jump in one off season for a guy like Arch Manning, especially when he is going to be quarterbacking an offense that, yes, was exceptional last year, but lost eight starters, including all but one of their skill position guys. And on top of all that, now this is probably less impactful on the Heisman and more impactful on, can Texas win the SEC this year? Can Texas win the national championship this year? But I think we got to stop pretending like Steve Sarkisian is not just a slightly more talented Mario Cristobal, right? Like, Cristobal at Miami, every time Miami's in a big game, keeps shutting the door on his own genitalia. I'm not convinced Sark isn't just a better salesman version of Mario Cristobal, and I point to that Ohio State playoff loss last year, especially that goal-to-go situation where you've been a power-run team all year, and you're suddenly trying end-arounds to the short side of the field against the best linebacking core in college football. I didn't understand it. So I think Arch is a guy I have a ton of questions about, and I think it is fair. Maybe he is that guy. He's got more resources with Eli and Peyton and Archie and, what is it, $6.4 million in NIL money. Like, he ain't hurting. He's got the resources to be it. But again, if he could not beat out Quinn Ewers last year, was one off season enough time to turn him into the definite Heisman front runner this year?
Rob Brown, my guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in. He hosts the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate in South Carolina, and he is a host rotating on the BetMGM network. Rob, how do you feel about Sark if he wins this weekend?
Same as I felt about Ryan Day when we asked the exact same question about him last year, right? Like, at some point, either you've got to get the monkey off the back and you've got to get it done, or at some point, we're just going to have to embrace that that is who you are. And it feels like that is this year for Steve Sarkisian. And it may not be his fault that it feels like it's that year for Steve Sarkisian. It may be the fault of, you know, the media or the AP voters or the coaching poll voters or whoever you want to say, but everybody's got Texas as the runaway number one. Everybody's got Texas to win the SEC, to win the national championship, to have the Heisman Trophy winner, yada, yada, yada. Because of all of that, it does kind of feel like Steve Sarkisian either gets it done, or do we not have to kind of maybe place Sarkisian into the James Franklin table of, like, I will believe this guy can get it done when it gets it done. Now, I know, like, to me, after having gone to SEC and ACC media days this year, it does feel like the narrative around Penn State has changed a little bit. Like, there were a lot less jokes about Penn State and big game James this year. But until James Franklin gets it done, that's the narrative. And I'm going to say, if Sark doesn't get it done this year, whether it is fair or not, I think he will go into that James Franklin category of, I don't believe he can get it done until it gets done. This isn't unique to Texas. He did it when he was coaching out on the left coast as well. If he doesn't get it done this year, I think he goes into that James Franklin category.
Rob Brown here talking college football with us. So do you think that Texas is going to be victorious against Ohio State? I bet Ohio State already, Rob. I bet Ohio State. I got him laying 1.5. Do you think that this Julian Sayin kid can outperform the new Tim Tebow?
I am with you. I am taking Ohio State. Now, I got them a couple of days ago when it was at 2.5. I think I saw that line today is down to 1.5. Ohio State is dogs at the crib, favorites at the crib. I am going to stick with an Ohio State money line win in this one. I think Ohio State's got questions too, right? Like, I think there are questions about replacing the talent they lost that went to the draft, guys like Amika Egbuka. I think it's fair to have those questions. Honestly, Denton Day, and I don't know if I am underthinking this, I really am taking Ohio State because of the coaching matchup. I think all the pressure is off of Ryan Day. I think that when it comes to who are these two unproven quarterbacks throwing the ball to, I mean, at some point, Julian Sayin can go with the bleep it Jeremiah Smith down there somewhere offense if they have to. And I think that that is absolutely a huge resource. If there's a guy going to New York City for that Heisman finalist who's not a quarterback, it's either him or the kid down at Alabama at the wide receiver spot. So I think there's a little bit less of a question on offense overall for Ohio State. And again, with the pressure off of Ryan Day to prove that he can coach in a big game, why not ride that narrative? So I don't think that losing this game eliminates Texas or Ohio State. I think both of them are still going to be front runners to win the conference. But I do think it will ding a confidence a little bit. And if I'm going to bet on that, I'm going to go with a coach that now after last year I have a little more confidence in big games like this, and that's Ryan Day.
Which game are you more interested this week, LSU, Clemson, Notre Dame, Miami?
That's a really good question. I'm going to say Clemson, LSU, and it's not because I cover Clemson, although I think there are some great storylines in this game, or in the Notre Dame, Miami game, Mario Cristobal being one of them, Marcus Freeman being one of them, the quarterback question, Notre Dame was somebody unproven in CJ Carr, Carson Beck, is he worth $4 million in NIL money? Sure. But think about the narratives that are in play in Clemson LSU. You got LSU who has not won an opening day game in 5 years, and Brian Kelly trying to get that monkey off the back. There is the narrative, is Brian Kelly on the hot seat? I have talked to a number of people. I had Peter Burns on the show a couple of weeks ago from the SEC Net. He's like, no, he's got too much money. But if he does not get to the playoffs this year, he will be on the hot seat next year. I'll say this. If they lose to Clemson out of the gate, there's a good chance they lose to Florida 2 weeks later and LSU starts what is expected to be a playoff season at 1-2. Tell me Brian Kelly's not a little bit on the hot seat at that point. And on the flip side, here's Dabo Swinney. We talked about the Dabo Swinney philosophy, right? Like, yeah, we'll allow NIL, but I'm not going to make it a huge focus of the program. I'm not going to lean super heavy into the portal. I made the joke that going into last year, there were three schools that did not have a transfer portal in player, two service academies in Clemson, right? Like, that's kind of what the Dabo philosophy is. This year is a referendum on whether the Dabo Swinney philosophy can work or not. You've got the best roster you've had in Clemson since 2018. You've got the upgraded wide receiver room you've been looking for. You've got the best front seven, in my opinion, in college football on defense. And now you've got a Heisman Trophy frontrunner quarterback. If Dabo does not get it done this year, then even if they come close, if he doesn't get it done, I think Clemson can start asking the question, is Dabo too much of a dinosaur? But if Dabo does get it done, I think everybody's got to shut the hell up about Dabo Swinney, and he can metaphorically turn a big old double bird to everybody that covers this sport that's been ragging on him. So I think you've got two season-long narratives about the head coaches at both schools. You've got two Heisman Trophy contenders in Garrett Nussmeier and Kate Klubnik dueling it out. I really think that game is more interesting, even if it is just step one in some season-long narratives.
Who's the most overrated team in college football right now?
Ooh, that's a really good question. I did have somebody yesterday tell me they honestly think it is South Carolina, and I'll kind of contradict some of the things I said earlier. I do not think it is South Carolina. I think South Carolina could also be a team that goes 7-5 this year. So I don't think people are wrong who say that that is the answer. I think Boise State was in that group, even though they were only ranked 25. I think the fact that they were the like consensus runaway group of five champ that would get a bid, I think that they were dramatically overrated in that spot. I don't know if this is fair. I think it might be the Auburn Tigers. I am completely frozen out on the Auburn Tigers. I think Hugh Freeze is a hypocrite. I think he's a liar. I think he has sold Auburn a false bill of goods. He's out there playing golf while he's telling everybody he's been dealing with health issues. I've not talked to anybody that covers or is a fan of this team that is in with Hugh Freeze. I think Hugh Freeze is a wonderful recruiter. I have no idea how or why, but I think he's a great recruiter who is not a great coach. And I'll tell you, when I bailed on Auburn 2 weeks ago, when Hugh Freeze said that he's got one guy who's going to call the plays on first down, and he's got one guy who's going to call the plays on third down, and he's going to call the plays on second and fourth down, but also sometimes he might step in and overrule the first down guy or the third down guy. When I heard that, I was like, dude, what the hell are you doing? And I know that Auburn is not like a highly ranked team, but there are a lot of people who expected them to be a contender in the Southeastern Conference to maybe be one of those SEC teams battling for a 10-2 at-large playoff bid. I think Auburn genuinely might be 6-6 and 7-5 this year and be looking for a new head coach next year.
So that means you like Baylor tonight, right?
I do like Baylor tonight. I've got a moneyline Baylor win tonight. I think Auburn can get upset. Now, there is one more interesting storyline. This one is not confirmed, so I do want to be very clear that this is kind of rumor and speculation, but I did get this from somebody in Opelika, Alabama, who covers this team that I do trust. There is a rumor going around right now that despite the fact that Auburn paid like a bunch of money to get Jackson Arnold out of Oklahoma with NIL to get him in the portal to Auburn, that he has been outperformed by their backup quarterback, a cat by the name of Deuce Knight, who is a very athletic, dual threat style quarterback. And the rumor going around Auburn right now is that Deuce Knight has clearly outperformed Jackson Arnold, and that Hugh Freeze actually wants to play Deuce Knight over Jackson Arnold, but because Auburn put in so much work and because Auburn spent so much money in the portal to get him there, that Hugh Freeze is being told, like, no, you're going to play Jackson Arnold. Because think about it. If he does not play Jackson Arnold, then in the future, if you're a big-time star in the transfer portal and Auburn comes to get you, and you look and you go, wait, Jackson Arnold was a guy you went after, and then you didn't play him, you're less likely to view them as a portal destination. And if you're an NIL sponsor, you put $250,000 into the pot to get Jackson Arnold there, and then you don't play that guy. Well, why am I spending $250,000 on a quarterback who's going to be on the bench and not advertising my company? I'm not going to give you NIL money moving forward either, which means that Hugh Freeze is going to either have to, A, play a quarterback he believes is inferior, or he's going to have to let that quarterback fail enough to where even the fans are going to say, no, we have to make a switch now. Either way, this is what I'm saying. When I think it's ugly behind the scenes, I've got a Baylor outright win ticket tonight against the Auburn Tigers.
You're a little bolder than me. I got him at +2. I wanted him +2.5. I waited too long, and now it was +2 this morning, so I had to grab him before it started to move a little more than that. So I got them at +2. Hugh Freeze getting that job because he could beat Saban for Saban to retire like a year after is also hilarious to me. Because, like, that's the entire reason they got him.
It is almost as funny as Brian Kelly leaving Notre Dame because he says that it's easier to win championships at LSU, and then Notre Dame goes to a title and Brian Kelly can't sniff one, even with Jaden Daniels. It is almost that funny.
Who's your champion?
You know what? I've gone back and forth, and I've been accused of this being a homer pick, didn't they? I don't think it is. When I'm picking a champion, I am looking at, number one, who has the best roster, and number two, who has the fewest questions about them. And to me, that's Clemson this year. I'm going with Clemson. Yes, I cover them, but I also think it's a good pick. You got, again, best front seven in football, Heisman Trophy caliber quarterback out front, very upgraded wide receiver room. The only question I have about Clemson is, can they run the football with converted wide receiver Adam Randall going to running back? And we'll get that answer. I think we'll get that answer tomorrow night against LSU. But I got a head coach who knows how to get it done. I've got a team full of guys who are fresh off an ACC title game. I got a roster that has dudes everywhere except at running back. I think you've got, position by position, one of the best rosters in football, and I think you've got the fewest questions about Clemson. I have more questions about Texas, Georgia, Alabama, Oklahoma, Ohio State. Because of that, I am picking the Clemson Tigers.
What about a Heisman pick, an official pick that you've locked in?
That's a tough one, and I'll tell you, I'm gonna fence sit this. I'm going to be an absolute coward on your show today.
You can give me two if you got two.
I've got three. I'm sending three. Now, those three are Arch Manning, everything I just said about Arch having questions, I do, and I think it's fair. But I will say this, Denton Day, that's a hell of a lot of smoke around this kid for there to be no fire, right? Like, this kid is getting more hype than any quarterback who has not played a full season in my life, honestly. I can't name another guy who's got more hype before they were ever even named QB1. So I will take the ticket. It's my smallest bet. I'm going to go full homer again. I'm glad I sound like a homer because it tells me that we have some good football here in South Carolina, Denton Day. I'm taking a ticket on Cade Klubnik and Lenore Sellers. I think Lenore, if he gets South Carolina, into the playoffs this year, then I think Lenore Sellers will also be a guy that has got himself in a Heisman Trophy position. But if he doesn't and Clemson gets into the playoff, especially if they get in as an undefeated 1 or 2 seed with a bye, then I think Cade Klubnik will have had a spectacular year. So I am going to go with those two guys, a ticket on each. So give me a ticket on Arch, on Cade, and on Lenore Sellers.
Rob, you are the man, my friend. Enjoy this weekend. It's going to be a lot of sitting on the couch, but it'll be glorious.
Over, under number of beers drank between here and Monday, I'm sitting at 22.5, buddy.
Now I'm smashing the over for you.
Yes, sir. That's the play.
That is Rob Brown of the Rob Brown Show on the Fan Upstate in South Carolina, and he also hosts on the BetMGM Network. Kind enough to break down this week one slate. We do have picks coming, but that will be in about an hour from now. We did okay yesterday. We split it 1-1, did okay yesterday. I think we're going to have a winning weekend, so we will give some picks out for today's game, tonight's games, and the games on Saturday. I also have one on Sunday as well. You'll get all of that. I'm convincing. I've been texting back and forth, Max. I'm trying to get Kevin to send me his smell test picks for the
you're hard at work
for the week. He gave me Cincinnati yesterday, and I was like, Kevin, I got terrible.
Oh no,
I was on Nebraska, but he was correct in that one. So we traded. He gave me the Cincinnati pick, and I was like, you should probably hammer USF. And he's like, all right, I'll think about it. And then he did the, he does this bit, which I think is funny. Like 4 hours later, when the game was in like the third quarter, he just went back and liked the text message that I sent him about it. And I was like,
that's a good bit.
I was like, thank you. I appreciate that. All right. I'm Denton Day. I'm sitting in for Kevin Sheehan. Evan Washburn coming up in about 10 minutes. Don't go anywhere. Evan Washburn, CBS, coming up here in about 5 minutes on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. I do have great news for those of us that are locked into college football.
There's more?
That were maybe a little worried. There was rumors.
Oh.
Yeah. There were rumors this week that Fox and YouTube TV were in some sort of contract stalemate.
Oh, I thought we were talking about different rumors.
We can get to other rumors if you got other rumors.
The Cade Klubnick fake story. I don't know if you heard about that. Somebody faked a car accident story.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I didn't pay too much attention to that.
This came across my timeline.
Yeah, I saw something like that. I saw something about like Clemson ratting out someone for LSU.
So they did do that.
What was that story?
So basically, he got into the player was playing at Houston last year, and they were playing BYU. He got into a fight in the second half of that game, the final game of the season. So Clemson went to the NCAA and was like, hey, he should still be serving a first half suspension. And it carried over.
That's very Dabo Sweeney-esque.
Very Dabo.
So my news is way better than both of those two things.
It is.
YouTube TV and Fox were going to have some sort of standoff. And this is not abnormal. It feels like as we get closer to football season every single year.
Wasn't there a CBS one like 2 years ago?
There was a CBS one 2 years ago. There was one. I don't know if it was that CBS one or another one. Because it feels like CBS has it every two or 3 years.
Yeah.
But there was one where you did lose like the first quarter of a game.
Yeah.
I remember that, to where you were trying to watch a game and it said, hey, we are at a disagreement. Help. I don't know what they can do. It's like, hey, go download Paramount or something like that. It wasn't anything like that. It was just like because it was before streaming services. So it was like a help. We're in trouble sort of a deal. Thankfully, YouTube TV and Fox worked it out. So you get to watch Texas and Ohio State. You get to watch Auburn and Baylor tonight. Auburn-Baylor is kind of the marquee as far as I'm concerned. Like yesterday was Boise State and USF.
Georgia Tech-Colorado doesn't interest you?
It does interest me, but it doesn't interest me as much as Auburn and Baylor. Just because those programs are a little higher up on the totem pole than a Georgia Tech and a Colorado. But I am kind of stuck on this Georgia Tech-Colorado game because I really, on one hand, really like Georgia Tech. But the line is super short. It's 4.5, and it doesn't feel like it should be 4.5. It feels like
correct.
Georgia Tech should be a much larger favorite, something in the neighborhood of 6.5, maybe 7. You know, something, I'm sure Kevin has done this to you, but something that Kevin used to do all the time, and we'd quiz each other, be like, hey, I got a line on this game. What do you think it is? And we play odds makers. If he were to do that to me, I would have said 6.5 for Georgia Tech in Colorado. So the fact that it's 4.5 worries me a little bit. I like the Colorado quarterback. He used to play at Liberty. He got me to go to a New Year's Six game. So I like the quarterback of Colorado. That line is just a little uncomfortable, and I don't know that I want to play it. So I'm stuck on that one. But I'm glad that we get to watch Texas, Ohio State, no issues. Because let me tell you, if it would have been 12:01, you're on Fox, and all of a sudden, it goes away. Hey, we're in a dispute. Call YouTube TV. Get them to side with us, or whatever the message was going to come up with. It would have been a madhouse. And whoever, I guess it would have been YouTube TV, whoever was manning the phones at YouTube TV would have had a bad day at work. Because there's nothing you can do to prepare yourself. Had a situation arisen where you had millions of angry college football fans calling you, some of which, most of which, who had already been pre-gaming. And I mean pre-gaming like in your own home or at like a bar. Or so. You know how it's like so crazy, Max? This is like such a 2025 thing. There are a lot of bars that use YouTube TV.
Yeah.
Like they're not on Fios or DirecTV. Now those bars still exist, but there are a lot of bars that use YouTube TV. I remember when we did the Honor Brewery pre-game and in-game show, or not in-game, because at that point the in-game show wasn't a thing. Pre-game show for the Detroit Lions game and the Philadelphia game in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
there in the, like, the area where we were watching it, which was like kind of in this like sectioned off little area.
Yeah.
You had to kind of like walk away from the bar. Kids weren't allowed back there, so on and so forth. But they had a really nice seating area, bunch of chairs, bunch of tabletops, all these things, right? You could fit like 50, 60 people back there comfortably. They were on YouTube TV. The bar was not. The bar was on Fios, so you could hear people screaming 40 seconds beforehand. That was a very odd dynamic to kind of deal with as a fan. All right, coming up next, we'll get back into the NFL. Evan Washburn, CBS Sports, going to jump on with us, talk a little bit about the Michael Parsons trade, what he learned from interviewing Jaden Daniels as well, and an outlook for the Commanders. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dente sitting in. Don't go anywhere.
All right, happy Friday, everybody, and even happier Friday to all my NFC East brethren. Besides Brian, who sits across from me, you may have heard already if you're living under a rock, or unless you're living under a rock, but Micah Parsons has been traded from the Dallas Cowboys to the Green Bay Packers in exchange for 2 first-round picks and defensive tackle Kenny Clark. Jerry Jones held a press conference late in the evening and said that those draft picks could get us top Pro Bowl players. The Mystics, they dropped one to the New York Liberty last night. The rookies, Kiki Arifin and Sonia Citron, continue to be bright spots offensively, leading the team in scoring last night. Rough shooting night for the team as they go 20% just from beyond the arc. Final score, 89-63. Moving to baseball, Kyle Schwarber became the 21st player in MLB history last night to hit 4 home runs in a ballgame, the 3rd this year after Nick Kurtz became the first rookie to accomplish the feat in July, and Eugenio Suarez did the same thing back in April. Kyle Schwarber also becomes the first Philly to do it since Mike Schmidt in 1976. The Nats, they take on the Tampa Bay Rays tonight. Mitch Parker looking to atone for his last 2 starts, giving up 12 runs in just 6 2/3 innings. He takes on Adrian Hauser, first pitch at 6:45 on the Fan, and Nats on Deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:15. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1, and you can catch Den's office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980 at the Denton Day on Twitter. We'll go back out to the phone lines now. Evan Washburn, CBS Sports, good enough to give us some time here on a Friday. Evan, first and foremost, man, appreciate the time. Hope you're doing well. Your reaction yesterday when you got the news that Michael Parsons was on his way out of Dallas and headed to Green Bay?
Well, good to be with you, Denton. I would say stunned, but not shocked. I think it's fair to always keep in the back of your mind that it is possible, despite what seems like a non-tradable asset and a player of Micah Parsons' ability, that if he's requested a trade and they clearly are having an impasse when it comes to contract negotiations, that a trade is possible, and not just because of the Dallas connection, but I think the Luka trade over the course of last spring or winter, whenever that was, kind of got us a little bit more in tune with the idea that anything is possible. So, yeah, I would say stunned. And then it being the Packers, even though they were rumored to offer, have a big offer in terms of draft equity, that one kind of was a reminder of, wow, that puts them in a different stratosphere. So it was one of those times where it definitely captured everybody's attention at the same time, which is fun.
What was your thoughts then when we had to all sit through? It felt like a communal event when we all sat through the Jerry Jones press conference following the trade.
It's funny you bring that up, because I saw that he was speaking at 6:30, so that would have been 6:30 Central, 7:30 our time, and I was already kind of winding down for the evening, and I did put it on my phone for the first probably 5 minutes, and then I just turned it off, because I just think I get why we do that, and we're part of that process, press conferences, but in a situation like that, it's not as if you're going to get the real story or the real reality. I mean, I think you can parse through what is being said and try and kind of armchair psychiatrist the whole thing, but I didn't spend the rest of my time consuming the entire press conference.
What does Kenny Clark bring to that defense? I feel like he's a good player, right? So he makes them at least better in one capacity, but I don't know if he's worth Michael Parsons.
Well, he's definitely not worth Michael Parsons, but I mean, they had to get somebody on top of the draft pick, so I think if there's somebody on that defense, then he's a capable piece. I think ideally in their world, he helps them stop the run, which they couldn't do at all last year. I know that was brought up when the trade went through after all the shock and awe of him going and how much money was spent to
bring Parsons in on the Packers side of things. But the story to me is more in specifically talking about the trade is the draft picks and what they'll actually end up being. I mean, that's where, to me, I really align with the thoughts of, all right, if you were going to move on from the player, why not shop him to a place that was willing to part with draft picks, sign him, but isn't a team that now will most likely finish in the realm of you picking in the late 20s and possibly in the 30 range for the next at least 1 to 2 years.
Evan Washburn, my guest here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day, sitting in for Kevin here on the Team 980. So, Evan, the reason that I reached out to you, you did a really great interview with Jaden Daniels. And, you know, Jaden is still very young in the league. And really, when you listen to him talk, whether it's in other interviews or in pressers, he doesn't really give you a lot. But I felt like you had one of the best interviews with him this entire offseason. What did you learn the most of sitting and talking with a guy that took the league by storm last year?
I appreciate you saying that. I would just say comfort in his own skin. He was clearly comfortable playing the quarterback position last year, and I think that comes from the amount of time and snaps and games that he was able to get under his belt in college, the environments he was in, from the issues or the trouble or the adversity, if you will, at Arizona State, and then thriving at LSU, which is basically like a pro program down there. I just felt like having met with him a couple times in his rookie season, he was in that mode of, I just want to do and say all the right things, which not to say he's not doing that now, but it just feels more natural. And he just seems so comfortable. And I watched practice much like you have, I'm sure. I'm sure you've maybe been to more practices than I have. I don't take too much away from that, especially in such a small sample size, but man, did he look, again, comfortable. I think the sense in my mind is that he now has complete control of this, and he showed that a lot last year. But where he and Cliff can go in year two, I imagine, is head and shoulders from where they were a year ago, but probably even where they were late in the season when they really got things rolling. So the word that just keeps coming to mind is comfort and who he is, what he's about, and that allows him in those settings, whether it's an interview or on the field, to just kind of be himself and not be concerned of doing and saying and all the right things that I think a lot of rookie quarterbacks, especially near the top of the draft, have to wrestle with.
So obviously a lot of us are thrilled with the way that the offense looks on paper. What do you think the addition of Deebo Samuel can do to elevate the offense from the end of last year going into 2025?
I think ideally it would be the ultimate kind of Swiss Army knife chess piece. I think you do have to keep in mind the amount of football he's played, not so much age, but just his style of play is his wear and tear that he takes is different than other receivers because he is doing a lot of things like lining up out of the backfield, his special teams role. I think that's going to be a big part of his role with the Commanders. I think with the new kickoff rule where you're going to the 35, we're going to see so many more kickoffs returned this year. And I think that's where Deebo can be a big factor, maybe even punt returns. But then for Cliff, who's the ultimate creative offensive coordinator, and Jaden, again, going back to that idea of just being able to have more on his plate, to have a player like Deebo who can literally line up anywhere on the field, probably even under center, I think that's where you want him. But I wouldn't want and or expect that it's going to be an immense amount of touches, especially early, because the goal and the issue with Deebo at times is he gets rolling and then he gets banged up and then you lose him for 3 or 4 weeks. And then even when he comes back, he's not what he was. So that's going to require a lot of sort of preparation, prudence, kind of the caution of how you use such an explosive player.
When you were at camp and just around the facilities, could you get the idea that they really started to like a guy like a Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt?
It was still early, Denton, when I was there. I want to say it was late July, was it? Yeah, I mean, if it was late or the first couple of days of August. So we were still kind of in those kind of early weeks of camp, but I know his name had popped. I don't think I was able, or I had it on my list to specifically ask whether it was Jaden or when I talked to Dan Quinn off camera and just kind of catching up with him, but clearly he's somebody that they identified, even if it was late in the draft, and have been pleasantly surprised. And that is really, for what feels like a marathon of a training camp season and preseason, what I enjoy is these guys that kind of outplay their draft pick status or whether even undrafted. I mean, I'm here in Baltimore and doing their preseason games, and they just had added three undrafted free agents to their defense. And it's a defense that many expect to be top 10 and a team that's competing for a Super Bowl most likely. So those kind of stories are the ones that I think make a time where we're all getting a little stir crazy, ready for real games. Pretty cool.
So because you're in Baltimore and you're kind of around them as well, right, and you get to kind of get a feel for what Lamar Jackson is, how personality-wise are he and Jaden similar?
Authentic, I think, and I don't mean that to say that all quarterbacks aren't authentic. I think, and it goes back to that discussion we had earlier about, I think there's this expectation that every quarterback's supposed to be the CEO or the front-facing or say all the right things, and it's almost like they've watched YouTube clips of how Peyton did it or Drew Brees or Tom, and then they kind of put their spin on it. And Lamar, from day one, has just been his own man, and it's the coolest thing. And he's gotten more comfortable, I would say, with what comes with being one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, and he's grown into it, but he's still always been himself. And at times he's guarded, but he'll also kind of open up and show you a little windows into his personality. And then obviously what he does on the field kind of speaks for itself. And I think that's where kind of Jaden, in his own way, going back to our earlier discussion about just his comfort, I think that's where you could see the similarity from an authenticity standpoint in his personality and how he's going to kind of be the face of an organization and one of possibly, I mean, I think he's got to back it up for a year or two, if not more, but he could be one of the new faces of the league along with Lamar and Josh and Mahomes.
Evan Washburn with me here on the Kevin Sheehan Show with Dent Day sitting in. Evan, I got three more questions for you. I saw that you were around the Pittsburgh Steelers training camp as well earlier this month. What has Aaron Rodgers been like in the addition with Pittsburgh?
Well, I think what's cool for Aaron is that it's the first time, especially since he left Green Bay, but probably even in the later years with Green Bay, where it's not really about him. I mean, we're going to make it about him because that's kind of what we do, and we have him week one as a crew, and he'll be the headline of our game. But within that building, especially when they're in Latrobe for training camp, they're one of the few teams that still goes remote for their training camps, or offsite, if you will. It's about the brand, the Steelers. It's about Mike Tomlin. It's about T.J. Watt. It's about Cam Hayward, D.K. Metcalf, Jalen Ramsey. Yeah, everybody wants to know what's going on with Aaron, but within that building, he's not required to be the ultimate leader at every moment, and they're not all looking at him. What Aaron Rodgers needs to be is a elevated version of what he was at the tail end of last year, and he needs to run that offense efficiently and make a few throws and big plays in critical moments. He doesn't have to be MVP Aaron. He doesn't have to be the guy who showed up to save the Jets a few years ago. And I think that has to give you some semblance of just relief that I'm among players with similar, and a coach, similar resumes to myself. So I'm with my people, if you will, as opposed to the wearing the weight of all that success is on my arm and my shoulders, which is what I think he felt at least the last couple of years outside of the injury season, and then probably his time in Green Bay when he became the man.
When you look at the overall hierarchy of the NFC, where do you think Washington falls?
Whew. I mean, I think Philly's in their own category right now, and that's well earned. I would just put them right probably in the next grouping of Detroit, Minnesota, Washington, and L.A. And I think they all have specific question marks, and that's kind of what makes this time of year fun to talk about. But for me, it gets a little bit maddening where it's like, we just got to get to where we can start to answer some of these things. And I would say Washington's question marks aren't as glaring as a Detroit's with the new coordinators, L.A. with the questions about Matt Stafford, Minnesota, is J.J. McCarthy capable of leading a team that has everything necessary to win a Super Bowl in his first season under center? For Washington, it's an old roster that's going to be relying on older players in and around a star young player in Jaden Daniels to replicate what was a magical season a year ago where they won a ton of not just close games, but somewhat improbable at times games. And that we've seen can be challenging. But I'm a buyer in what Dan and Adam Peters have been able to do.
And finally, do you have a have you picked a champion yet? Who do you think is winning it?
I've never really done it like in a, and I have no issue doing it. I mean, I think we're not supposed to pick games that we call. So, like, I don't know how that works if you're talking about the Super Bowl, which we're not doing this year. I don't know. I would say from the AFC, I wrestle with the same three. It's Buffalo, Kansas City, and Baltimore. I think Cincinnati's going to have their say in some things. Pittsburgh could be fun if they catch lightning in a bottle with that group. I always sort of lean towards saying Bills. And it's funny, I was in my kids' drop-off line today, and the gym teacher asked me who my Super Bowl was, too, and I just joke with him. I was like, well, I guess I got to pick the Packers now because they got Micah, and they're a pretty good team, too. But Philly's tough to pick against right now. The Philly's biggest opponent this year, in my mind, is going to be just their environment. It's such a group that, to me, kind of feeds off of the doubt and the Philly fan base and all the tension that always exists. And if they're this good, or at least what they were at the end of last year, the way they won the Super Bowl, there's not going to be that tension. There's not going to be that doubt. And maybe that's their biggest opponent. So for your case, Denton, I'll go Bills, Eagles, and see where we land.
Evan, appreciate the time as always, my friend. Enjoy the lead up to week number one.
You got it, buddy. Thanks.
That is Evan Washburn. You can see him roaming the sidelines, calling games for CBS Sports. In fact, you'll be able to see him on Paramount Plus and all football talk on the Team 980 is presented by Paramount Plus. You can't count on much these days, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game every Sunday on CBS and Paramount Plus all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. When we get back, Ben Standing will join us, get his thoughts on the lead up to week number one. Did Washington actually have a chance at Micah Parsons? He answers that question next. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show with Denton Day sitting in.